Welcome, one, welcome all. Love me, like me, loathe me. None of that matters as long as you're listening to and or watching the show. My next guy coming on here, I think, feels identically the same. He doesn't give a shit if you like him, you loathe him, you love him. Doesn't matter to Jay Mariotti. It's never mattered to Jay Mariotti. That's been his problem. He doesn't thirst. He doesn't crave to be liked. Jay doesn't. But every Wednesday night, he comes on this here show at this here time. And he's with me again as we start another edition of, Jay Mariotti Wednesday Night with me. Hi, Jay.
Why get into the media, you know, if it's about a popularity contest? Why, who would do that?
Seriously. Seriously. How are you tonight, Jay?
I'm wonderful. I'm just trying to decide if we're in the middle of World War III right now.
Well, listen, that's not a stretch to consider. World War III might be on the horizon sometime shortly, and I say that seriously. But let me start here. Let's get to the... Of course, we've been talking about the build-up to this documentary with Jordan. The Last Dance debuted this past Sunday night, episodes 1 and 2. Earlier this week, I said that I enjoyed it. It moved along nicely. I didn't learn anything new that I didn't already know, but I think it was... I think it's been pretty good up to this point in time. They really haven't gotten into, you know, a lot of the meat and potatoes in terms of the controversial or polarizing stuff at this point in time, so we can't render judgment yet until we see it, of course. But here's the thing that struck me the most, Jay, about that first two parts of The Last Dance. And it not only did it strike me, it disgusted me on some levels, okay? Now, they spoke with Michael Wilbon. They spoke with Rick Tellender. They spoke with this one. They spoke with that one. And I'm saying to myself, Jay, now listen, dude, you're going to like this. How is it that you can make a documentary on Michael Jordan and not reach out to the most widely read sports columnist during the zenith of his and the Bulls' epic dynasty? That guy's name, as you know, is Jay Mariotti. How do you not place a phone call to you, who you were smack dab in the middle of that fucking thing for years, and they went to a lot of different people to get their thoughts on this, that, and the other thing, and nobody reached out to Jay Mariotti? This is criminal as far as I'm concerned.
Well, as you know, ESPN engaged me in a holy war that I think still exists. I was in a legal case that I eventually won, and the president at the time, John Skipper, who was fired because he had a cocaine issue a few years ago, decided that on Around the Horn, he wanted more diversity. He told me that, used those very words at a dinner we had in Malibu one night at Nobu. And my jaw almost hit the sushi because what Skipper was doing was trying to promote the Jemele Hills of the world and Michael Smith and people I respected, yet, wait a minute, what are we doing here? I love diversity as much as anybody, but you're going to do this at the expense of me, and you're going to use a legal case that I ended up winning against me? Well, that's Skipper. That's what he did. You saw the way that ESPN devolved for a period of time into pure politics and lost ratings and the Kaepernick deal, and finally they get rid of Skipper, and now things are back to normal. Actually, probably too much sports during a pandemic. I wish they would explore the pandemic a little more. It's almost like a sandbox right now, you know, this hermetically sealed sandbox where you can't get in. When sports are coming back, don't interfere with anything about the pandemic. That's what, you know, Scott Van Pelt is Mr. Rogers right now. So anyway, why didn't they call me? All of that. I don't think Jordan would have cared. In fact, Jordan would have probably enjoyed it. What you saw in the first episode was a condemnation of Jerry Reinsdorf and Jerry Krause. What have I been telling you all of these shows we've done through the years? Finally, we're seeing it visualized that the Jerrys were saboteurs who, in one case, Reinsdorf, couldn't wait to gather all the revenues from this. As it is, he wasn't paying Jordan, Phil, and Scotty what they were worth. And then Krause, this dangling, who didn't get enough credit, and they conspired to wrecking balling, the greatest sports dynasty we've seen. I am happy, Dino, that people around the world are finally seeing what I had to deal with in Chicago. I'm the only guy pounding on these two guys. And Reinsdorf, as you can see, is the kind of weasel who would play politics. try to get you fired, maybe try to get into your legal case a little bit, and call Bob Iger at Disney, as I know he did. These are weasels, and I'm glad that they're being exposed.
Some have already gotten some emails in that they want forwarded to Jay. We'll get to those. If you want to get on the list, you send your emails, your question, your comment, whatever, to talktodino@gmail.com. That's talktodino@gmail.com. We have talked about the way that they took a wrecking ball to that dynasty and never gave it a chance to lose before they made some changes. And we heard Jordan say that, of course, he felt that they should have been given that opportunity. But as I made my way through those first two episodes, and I talked about it earlier this week here on the show, Jay, it's simply unfathomable to me when you look at Jordan and you look at the transcendent qualities that he had, still has in many ways up until this very second of this very day, that you would allow or would not seek his input on any level in terms of how things would proceed going forward. And I know that Reinsdorf is a businessman, and I know that Krause had an ego and he wanted to prove that he could do it without Jordan, without Jackson. But it still boggles my mind. I think it boggles the mind of any Chicago Bulls fan right up until this very second of this very evening that we're talking, that Jordan was never brought into the circle, and not maybe to direct and not to make mandates and demands, but at least to get his thoughts on how things should move forward. Because as the documentary clearly points out, and again, nothing that you and I and many other people didn't know, but the Bulls were nothing more than a pedestrian franchise in the National Basketball Association prior to Jordan's arrival, with limited years of success. And Jordan transformed them into, as he said coming in out of North Carolina, I'd like to see this team someday be on the level of how people talk about the Celtics and the Lakers. Well, that materialized clearly. And how you do not give him some say or want to know what he thinks to this day is just a question that I guess you can answer it. But any answer, Jay, to me doesn't make any sense.
Well, let me give you a name. Jerry Buss. Jerry Buss had Showtime with the Lakers. He sat back and enjoyed it. He made Magic Johnson happy. In the 90s, when the NBA was booming, he said, Magic, I'm going to rip up your contract and redo it. You brought us championships. We're going to redo your contract. The Knicks did it for Patrick Ewing at the time. The Celtics did it for Larry Bird. Reinsdorf would not redo the contract of Michael Jordan, 8 years, $24 million, and Jordan really never made a fuss about it, but Pippen did. 122nd, as you saw in the league in pay. Phil Jackson, winning championships every year, has to be Scrooged every summer with a low ball and then takes a one-year deal. That is on Reinsdorf. And people want to blame this on Krause. You know, in fact, you could see Reinsdorf saying, "Yeah, Krause, it does. Hey, Jerry, you're the damn owner. Why don't you get in the middle of this? And when Michael and Scotty are making fun and mocking Krause, stop it. Find them. Say, you're not going to treat my general manager like that." And then the other way around, you're going to go to Krause and say, would you be a human being and try to get along with these people instead of trying to trade Scotty? You saw this Tim Floyd story yesterday. Tim Floyd comes up and says that Krause had been calling him every day for years, wanting to replace Phil Jackson, going way back to the late 80s. And that during the 96 finals in Seattle, Reinsdorf flew Floyd to Seattle and said, Krause doesn't want Phil anymore. We want you. And Tim Floyd is like, who the hell am I? I'm Tim Floyd. Jerry, I'm going to give you some advice. Don't break this thing up. It's stupid. And they didn't, but then they eventually hired Tim Floyd. Now, you're seeing all of this dysfunction right now. Jerry Buss, and I could name you any number of owners of very successful sports dynasties, would just sit back and enjoy it, make everybody happy. These guys decide to dabble in dysfunction, and they get bitter about who's getting the credit and who isn't, and Reinsdorf can't wait to wrecking ball it so he can create his own dynasty. Well, how has that gone, Jerry, 22 years later? I'm thrilled that people are finally able to see this. And I'm not patting myself on the back. What I'm telling you is the people you saw interviewed, the media people in that documentary, safe. The one guy who was pretty good was Mark Fancel, who got out of the business, I think, about 25 years ago. He wrote Jordan's book called Rare Air, yeah. Coffee Table book. back in the mid-90s, and he got the hell out of the business. He was good. The rest of them, pedestrian, some of them seemingly fed lines. ESPN should have had me. I don't care. I'm not complaining about it. I don't care. It's serving its purpose. It's great. I don't think Jordan would have cared. I'm pretty sure my name came up, and I'm pretty sure ESPN said nope.
What was the, at that time in Chicago, Jay, bring us back, when they announced that was it, Jackson wasn't coming back, he could go 82-0, they could sweep the playoffs, Jackson's not coming back, they're going to break this thing up, and throw in your feelings on what you were writing about in terms of Pippen and his contractual issues that he was having. What was the tenor and the tone? What were you saying in the pages of the Chicago Sun-Times during this period of time? Bring us back there if you could.
Well, it wasn't just that year, Dino. It was throughout the 90s. Everybody was underpaid throughout the 90s. Pippen, Bill, and Michael, all underpaid by Reinsdorf, who never rectified the situation. When it reached a head, it was media day in 1997, and it reached a head, and that Krause quote to Phil, which Phil confirmed, and his agent, Todd Musburger, a brother of Brent, confirmed several times. It made the rounds, and it kind of just made all of us a little nauseous that this was a confirmation that these two guys, the owner and the general manager, thought they could break it up and that the owner was now going to hoard all of the, you know, countless millions they have made off of Michael Jordan, who merely gentrified the west side of Chicago. And furthermore, Dino, Reinsdorf knew we can kind of tank it for a couple of years, and that United Center will continue to be filled because all those people who couldn't afford to get in the building during the dynasty, well, they'll keep coming and filling the place. Look up the attendance figures. They kept selling out games when they had Rusty LaRue at shooting guard, when they were winning 15 games. And what's so astonishing is I'm shocked that nationally this never became a story that it should have been. It was one of these, oh, shucks, you know, the thing ran its course. No, these guys broke it up before its time, and it was about money, it was about business ego, and it, you know, Jerry Krause had his shot. And I remember him saying, we're going to have two full boats. That meant two big free agent contracts after everybody was gone. They brought Tracy McGrady and Eddie Jones in. Tim Duncan at one point, Michael Jordan and Scottie poisoned the Jerrys, said, nope, you're not going to go play for them. Michael ran the league. And anybody who the Bulls showed any remote interest in as a free agent, Michael said, don't you dare go there. Nobody went. And you saw how Tim Floyd just floundered and then gets fired on Christmas Eve. And the Bulls, except for a little blip here and there, have not even come close to reaching the NBA Finals. Krause passed away in 2017. Dino, I'm a little surprised that there isn't a little more empathy. Michael, again, the executive producer of this thing, is going hog wild after Krause in this. And I'm a little surprised he didn't pull off the reins a little bit. But I think you're seeing that Michael Jordan is allowing all those years of animosity toward both of these guys come out in full blossom in this docuseries.
Okay, Michael in Jacksonville, Florida. Here's an email for you, Jay. Dino, recently on a show Chris Russo did, when talking about Pippen's frustration with his contract, his contractual demands, Russo said that Pippen should have shut his mouth and honored his commitment. Can you please get Jay's reaction to that?
This franchise making money hand over fist in an arena, brand new arena at the time that Jordan built. Dino, I don't know if you ever were on the west side of Chicago in the 80s or the early 90s. It was frightening to go to the old Chicago Stadium. They literally had you escorted out the press door to your car because it was that frightening. The projects, drugs, the guns, the gangs. That was the west side of Chicago. Michael Jordan gentrified all of that. And if you went back there now, you would not believe what you see and how cool the area is, and restaurants and nightclubs. It's an entertainment district right by the United Center. This owner, and not just Reinsdorf, but his many investors, hoarded the money. Scottie Pippen, his contract should have been ripped up and redone. Absolutely. As I told you earlier, all of these other stars in the league, their owners were ripping up the deals. Michael Scotty. Phil should have gotten, obviously, a max coach's deal. None of it happened. And they were all a little scared of Reinsdorf, so they always went after Krause. It was always poking fun at Krause. But they were as pissed off at Reinsdorf as anybody. And Michael, in his many conversations with me, especially after he left Chicago, just tore into Reinsdorf. Right now, as a fellow owner, he's not going to go nuts on Reinsdorf in this documentary. But Krause is bearing the brunt of it. And yes, Jerry Krause is the guy who unearthed Scottie Pippen out of Central Arkansas and made the draft night trade for him with Seattle. Should have been the first guy knocking on Reinsdorf's door and saying, we really should redo Scottie's deal. But I think Krause felt he was underpaid as well. Reinsdorf is a damn cheapskate. Is there any other way of putting it when it comes to all of these people?
Well, we can't ask Krause because, of course, he's deceased. But as far as Reinsdorf was concerned, and the way that he kind of verbalized things in the first two episodes, whenever they showed him, Jay, it didn't appear. I'd love to ask Krause all these years later, if you could have done it differently, would you have done anything differently? I'm surprised that they didn't ask the Reinsdorf this in one of the first two episodes. Maybe they will, you know, eventually. But it didn't appear to me when I listened to Reinsdorf in the first two episodes that he regrets a damn thing that they did. You would think that maybe retrospect and, you know, the hindsight being 2020 might see that they should have handled the situation a little bit differently. But according to what I saw, what you saw and heard, it doesn't appear as though Reinsdorf's got a regret in the world over the way things went down.
This guy is one of the most arrogant people I've met in my life. And if you look at his results without Michael Jordan, he bought the Bulls in, I believe, 1985. So he inherited Michael Jordan. It's not as if he went to the GM and said, why don't you draft this Jordan guy? He inherited Jordan when he bought them. Okay, 1985, that is 35 years ago. He bought the Chicago White Sox in 1981, so you're going on 40 years. So a collective 75 years of sports ownership in baseball and basketball. If you toss out the Jordan years, and I'm convinced, in spite of these dinglings, you know, any owner would have won championships with Michael Jordan. In fact, they would have won more because he wouldn't have wrecking balled the thing before its expiration date. Without Michael Jordan, Jerry Reinsdorf is 1 for 65, we'll include the entire Bulls years there. 1 for 65, if an owner in New York was 1 for 65, they'd have run his ass out of town years ago, Philadelphia, Boston, anywhere. And yet Reinsdorf, because he has a lot of powerful friends in sports and entertainment and politics, has a lot of backing out there. And believe me, I learned that any number of times. It's almost run like a mafia, the Reinsdorf Mafia. And he's got a lot of friends in Hollywood and a lot of powerful people out here and a lot of people at ESPN, a lot of people at Fox, you name it. So Jerry has a defense corps that should not exist. If you're just looking at the numbers without the influence, the political influences, Jerry Reinsdorf has been a horseshit owner who happened to luck into Michael Jordan. And then when Michael Jordan left, you've seen the results. One World Series championship in 95. I still can't believe it happened. Nothing with the Bulls, not even close. The White Sox have been nondescript for about 11 years, haven't made the playoffs. This is a terrible owner. And yet, as you said, you saw him the other night, he's proud as can be, proud as a peacock. Ugh. Yeah, now everybody knows what I had to deal with this asshole.
22 minutes after the hour, another go-round with Jay Mariotti here, hour number two on this Wednesday night, April the 22nd, 2020. You heard me invoke the name of Rick Tellender. I have never spoken with Rick Tellender. I've never met him. I have heard him. I've read him. Whenever I've heard him, whenever I've seen him, he kind of hits me. And again, I'm not trying to diminish this man at all, but he kind of seems to be the kind of a guy that is above it all. And I'm wondering if you had any kind of a relationship with him and what your thoughts are on Rick Tellender.
Well, sometimes I'm trying to beat the other paper, the Tribune, and one thing we prided ourselves on in Chicago was we have the sports page. And we were the two columnists, and I got to tell you, I mean, two completely opposite approaches. I mean, there are times when Tellender would write about the erosion of Lake Michigan, and you know, I'm thinking, well, how does this apply to the coverage here? kind of out there, kind of eclectic, came from a Sports Illustrated background, but, you know, a guy who, I don't know if above it all is it. I think Rick Callender wrote a brilliant book about college football and the corruption within, I think, back in the 80s. He also wrote a great book about playing basketball in the projects in New York. I think it was called Heaven as a Playground. Two exceptional books, but just because you're a book author back in the 70s doesn't mean it translates into daily sports column writing. It's a different function in a city like Chicago with all of this stuff. You've got to be on it every single day like a talk show host would be. There are so many stories with so many franchises, always dramas. You've got to be on it. He never was. He made my job very difficult. He was out in space half the time, where we had to bring in another columnist to help me out. So I think his name helped us, Dino, the Sports Illustrated background, but I don't know if it really fit into the Chicago everyday sports fanaticism. It was just sort of this airy, off-the-beaten-path thing where we kind of tolerated the guy. Don't think he was a fan of me, because I think deep down he was a Chicago sports fan. Well, you're not supposed to be a sports fan when you're writing a sports column. So, I don't know. You know, I think Callender is good on these things because he kind of paints a broad brush. But in regard to the nitty-gritty of what went down, I'm only seeing one guy on there. I named him Mark Vansel earlier. Nobody knows Mark. But Mark is the one who kind of laid out Krause properly in this. And, Michael Wilbon's going to be on there, Jay Atande, because they're ESPN people.
Yeah.
But I think as this goes on, you're going to see more and more other, you know, basketball people on and athletes. And you'll say, you know, I've seen the list of people interviewed. That was an introductory session. I think as time goes on, we'll be seeing a variety of people.
Listen, no doubt, and you've been very public about it. It's been written about. You've spoken about it here on my show. The breakup with the Chicago Sun-Times was acrimonious on certain levels. But I'm thinking, Jay, if especially with today, with the way the newspapers are dying, if those who are running the Chicago Sun-Times had any brains in their head, they'd be calling you and asking you to come back, or seeing what it would take to have you come back to Chicago. Now, this leads me to another question, and the both of us, I believe, have a healthy respect for the very eccentric Buzz Bissinger, who HBO did a documentary on not too long ago. The both of us saw it. We talked about it a little bit. And in that documentary, Buzz was almost teaching what could be considered to be a master class on writing, what makes a good writer, how you should go about it, what the craft involves, so on and so forth. If Jay Mariotti was sitting in a class right now, and I was in attendance, and I was listening to Jay talk about what makes the epitome of a good columnist, what is the epitome of a great columnist, what are those attributes, what are those characteristics and features, what would Jay Mariotti say?
The passion for the subjects has to match that of the audience. And in Chicago, it's a rabid audience. I think a little too rabid, as I've told you. Philadelphia, Boston, Chicago, Detroit, Cleveland. These towns a little bit off kilter. Denver, just a little bit disproportionate to reality in regard to their following of sports. But in Chicago, because these stories were so fascinating to me, the sports columnist, the journalist, I think my passion in bringing it to people matched their fanaticism. And yes, I think sometimes, Dino, I wrote things that they didn't want to read, and that's why there was some animosity and hatred. But I think there was also a healthy respect there. That the readership I had was incomparable in Chicago. I knew it. And when we started digital, you know, my numbers were the best at the paper. Only Roger Ebert compared when he wrote a review. So I think I nailed it simply in caring and knowing the subject matter, and being a good reporter, and being a good observer, and letting it fly, and write for the audience, the two eyeballs reading it, or the two eyeballs watching you on TV, or the two ears listening to your radio show, and don't write for your friends in the media, or for the owner, or for the athletes, or for your sources, or your agents. And that's what too many people do, Dino, today. They sell out. It's the easy way out. They protect themselves in a cocoon by okay, I can write this because this guy's going to protect me. And this. No, I was naked to the world. I'm independent. And every day I felt like a kamikaze pilot getting shot down. But I didn't care because I felt the message I had in staying free to my convictions was far more important than, you know, pissing somebody off. I don't know, man, how many times I pissed off Michael Jordan, and every time I saw him, he'd yell at me, but then he'd give me great stuff like you saw the other night. He's very honest with you. It was well worth it. And I think he had more of a respect for me than somebody who pussyfooted around and didn't really write, you know, the cold, hard truth about a topic such as this. Dino, if there was ever a sports topic that deserved the cold, hard truth, it's the Chicago Bulls dynasty. All of these stories, and we're just getting started here. We even talked about Jordan and gambling, his father's murder, Dennis Rodman. It's just the insanity that you could have these so many different elements antithetical to each other in the same pot. And yet, there were times in Chicago, honestly, I felt I'm the only guy writing it. I'll tell you one more story to give you an idea what Chicago was like. Our beat writer, we're having a beer after a game one night. He says, I hear that Jordan punched Steve Kerr. I said, well, are you going to write it? And he said, well, I don't think I can. I said, why not? Well, the access could be difficult. I said, fuck the access. Well, give it to me. I'll write it. Well, you can't do that. I wrote it. It got out. And people were afraid to piss off Reinsdorf, piss off Michael. Why? Why are you in the business if you're afraid to piss off somebody? You afraid you're going to be ostracized and they're going to make fun of you? So the hell what? I had Ozzie Guillen call me a fucking fag, quote unquote. Think I cared? So you're seeing, you know, I had the kind of attitude and approach that kind of scared people in sports, and that's why it's great to talk to you now, because I feel like I can let it hang out. But it's different at a newspaper or different at ESPN. You think I could ever say these things on the Round the Horn or get some of this stuff into a column? No. You've got editors in bed with people. You've got publishers in bed with Reinsdorf, ESPN. Bob Iger takes Jerry Reinsdorf's phone calls. So anybody listening to this show that I do every Wednesday with Dino Costa, understand that this is almost impossible to get away with this in this day and age. And keep listening, because this is where you're going to get the true shit. You're not going to really get it at The Athletic or at ESPN, because there are politics involved.
Well said, Jay. Well said. And it's interesting. I want to go down this road a little bit with you since we're on. I think one of the reasons, and it's a big reason why I enjoy speaking with you and why I've always admired your work. I have not always agreed with your opinions, no more so than you've always agreed with mine. We see the world differently on a few different levels, but I've got a more than healthy respect for you because of your fearless independence. I relate to that. It's something that speaks to me, and I've always been like that. Saying that, when we talk about our respective careers, I mean, I was a pain in the ass many times. I've said things, done things, acted in ways that in retrospect I wish I didn't. I think that time and distance provides us with a clarity in certain instances, and I've spoken openly about some of the things that I would have done differently without losing the edge, without losing the independence and the fearless sort of a way that I go about my job. And when we talk about Jay Mariotti, and of course, you know, many of the things that have been said about you are born out of a couple different things, jealousy, resentment, all that other kind of stuff. Plus, people, I think they want to be who they can't be, or they want to be that person, and they just don't have it within themselves to be that kind of a person. And so it's easy for them to chop people down who do things and act in accordance with their beliefs and convictions the way that you do, the way that I do, the way that Buzz Bissinger does, the way that a select few in this country do as far as media personalities are concerned. Saying all of that, with time and distance, as I mentioned, and clarity perhaps coming in, focusing in on some things in terms of interpersonal relationships, in terms of, you know, the people, Jay could be a real fucking pain in the ass, so on and so forth. As you have viewed the microcosm of your own career and some of the things and the ways that you acted and the ways that maybe you had relationships with people. Is there a certain degree of, you know, where you regret doing some things or acting in some ways that if now you can see that perhaps if I had done this or I hadn't said that or if I didn't choose to pick this fight, maybe things would have gone a little bit smoother for me and everybody else? Honestly and candidly, do you ever think like that?
No, because I think I've been the victim of a smear campaign, and I'm being deadly serious.
No, and I agree with you.
Ask anybody out there who I would say our sports staff in Chicago, maybe 40 at the time. Now they're down to about 6, probably, but 40. I'd say the people who cared about us winning, we were all tight. Any number of writers. Another fellow columnist, certain people on the copy desk, a couple of editors. But Dino, I had no patience for people I thought were in bed with people who didn't have the paper's best interests at heart. So if I got into confrontations with somebody, and quite honestly, the other person was getting into it with me, I was usually independently minding my own business and trying to do my thing when a guy like Kellender would try to pick a fight. Or, I mean, just weird-ass shit. Remember Rick's a former football player. I think he said he will donate his brain to science when he passes. And I don't know, sometimes I was dealing with somebody out of whack. I think that if you just ask anybody who knew me, I was the best teammate you could ever have because I wanted to win. I didn't want this second newspaper in Chicago to fail. Hell, Dino, I started out of college at the Detroit News, and that thing, you know, is about to fail. Then I moved to the Cincinnati Post as a columnist. That failed. Then I moved to the Rocky Mountain News as a columnist. That failed. Then I go to the Denver Post as a columnist. That's failing. I go to the National Sports Daily. That failed. I go to Chicago, the Sun-Times, get there, and they say it's about to die. And I took great pride in keeping that thing alive. It's sputtering right now. It probably will die because newspapers are there's no advertising during a pandemic. But I took pride in bringing that feisty nature to a paper. And I think if you talk to the people who really knew me and knew what we were doing, we had a cool thing going on. And, you know, I've got a lot of enemies out there, and they spread, you know, the internet is allowed to spread smear campaigns. Christ, there was a guy who was a heroin addict at Deadspin, J.A.J. Delario, who seemed to have this sick obsession with me, and it turns out he's got to go to rehab several times because he's a heroin addict. I mean, this is the sort of crap I'm dealing with, and that's why I would urge people, if you're reading, and I don't even know what happened to Deadspin, but if you're reading these unsavory websites that make crap up about people, probably get paid by outside influences to do it, you know, just listen to me here with Dino. This is what you're getting. And I'm just some guy. I'm not some evil monster. I just happen to believe in the profession or what is left of it, and I want to beat the competition. I don't see anything wrong with that.
I concur 1,000%, and I also would concur that there has been a great deal of smear job, you know, practices done against you, done against a lot of people, me, you, so many people, people who are outspoken are easy targets, and you know, and people who are outspoken who run into, you know, unfortunate episodes. I've run into them. You've run into them. It just exacerbates the situation in these people's minds, and they pigeonhole you as somebody that they believe you to be without having a clue. They don't hang around with you. They don't know your friends. They don't know your family. They, you know, so, you know, I take it with a grain of salt, Jay, and I'm sure at this point you do as well. All right, let me double back to the question now. This is interesting, okay? Newspapers are dying right now. And I just found out that a guy by the name of Chris Fusco is the editor of the Chicago Sun-Times right now. And he's listening to the show right now. And he says, you know what? After this, you know what? I'm going to call Mariotti, and I want to know if we can get Jay Mariotti to come back to the Chicago Sun-Times, because I think it would be, as you said before, in the best interests of this newspaper. If Chris Fusco called you on speed dial after we hung up the phone tonight and said, Jay, would you talk to me about coming back to the Sun-Times? What would you say?
What I know of Chris Fusco, who was a news side reporter when I was there, is that he is an excellent reporter. I don't want to paint the Sun-Times with a broad brush. I think there are certain people in sports, including the sports editor, clearly up the ass of Reinsdorf. They're Bulls writer is clearly a Fiasco Bryan story. That I can't, you know, those two people have done the smearing of me. If a guy like Chris Fusco could remain independent of that and bring himself to realize the kind of audience I had there, I'd listen to him. At this point, Dino, I would listen to any cool, we've talked about this, any cool person out there in writing or in TV or in radio, audio, that would let us be, who would respect us for what we are, independent, respect us for the audience we bring in, and not try to tiptoe around and let's just try to hang on for dear life here. If I were at a newspaper right now, whether in Chicago or anywhere, when I went to San Francisco a few years ago, I mean, I was, you know, may the best man win here. Last one standing, even though our paper in San Francisco had no chance at all, zero, had no money. But I gave it a shot anyway. I'm a battler. I love to brawl in a you know, media war, because I've been in my share of them from the day I started in this business, in Detroit, in Chicago, in Denver. I mean, that's what it was. When Around the Horn started on ESPN, we were getting trashed for being the piggyback of Pardon the Interruption. Well, I took pride in being there every day for 8 years, and by the end, our peak years, and took 2010, you know, our numbers are about where PTI's are. Took great pride in being a major part of that. So, I don't know, Dino. I mean, I've had some challenges. We all have. I think the challenge right now for any newspaper is pretty dire. I think the Sun-Times is a couple of breaths away from death. It's sad. I don't want to see anybody lose jobs. It's being kept in business by, of all people, the owner of the Blackhawks. They were about to die several times in recent years, and out of nowhere, Rocky Wirtz decides to bail out the Sun-Times. And the first thing I would ask is, do I get to rip Rocky Wirtz if the Blackhawks suck? And they have in recent years. And they'd probably say, well, no, you can't rip Rocky because he signs our paychecks. See what I mean?
Yeah,
you know,
of course.
John Henry, I can't wait to see the Boston Globe's coverage of this bullshit Red Sox quote-unquote penalty tonight.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see the Globe tomorrow. John Henry, owner of the Red Sox, owns the Boston Globe. Jeff Bezos, anti-Trump, owns the Washington Post. These big money guys are saving newspapers, but with a hitch. You'd better play my politics, or in the case of Rocky Wirtz, you'd better not rip me or my hockey team. So, you know, it's a lost cause. The independent commentary in this day and age, if you're covering politics, you're either here or you're here. You can't be in the middle. And if you're a sports commentator, you're either Scott Van Pelt, who's acting like Mr. Rogers every night, you know, if you dare to do what I do or you do, they're going to get rid of your ass, because somebody with money and influence is going to say, get rid of him or I'm going to keep advertising out of your paper. The problem is now newspapers have zero advertising right now. Sports stations, zero advertising. So that's why you're seeing this heavy push for sports are coming back. Sports are coming back. No, they're not coming back, but it's almost a brainwash effect. Man, we'd better speak this into existence or else we're going to lose their jobs. You're not going to speak it into existence until there is a vaccine and we have herd immunity. I'm not going to go over this again. We do it every show we do. But that's where you're going to see a lot of these media outlets take a tumble here. It's going to be very sad, but without advertising, how are you going to pay the people who work for you?
It's funny you mentioned the San Francisco Examiner, which of course was the last paper that you were at, because Stanley in Chicago emails me, says, I'm a big Mariotti fan from back in the days. I wish Jay was back with the Chicago Sun-Times. And he wants to know, what was the real deal with what went down as far as your departure from the San Francisco Examiner? And as you know, before you answer that question, Jay, I told you and I continue to say, you, that was some, you came out of the gates firing on all cylinders, man. You were pumping out 4 or 5 columns a week. Some of your best work that I've ever read was at the Examiner in San Francisco. So Stanley wants to know what happened there.
Well, I appreciate the comment. Thank you. I went there knowing that it was a shell of its former self. The Examiner back in the day was a great newspaper, but it was sold. The Chronicle got bigger in San Francisco. The Examiner became literally a handout. There was no price on the newspaper. You could get it for free. And I wasn't going to go, but they brought me up there. It was impressive. And I thought, this would be kind of cool. I've always loved the area. There's a lot going on in sports. That was the beginning of the Warriors dynasty. I said, what the hell? They're going to make you the sports editor. Write what you want. They told me we were going to have a big budget. I was going to be able to hire people. Well, very quickly it became apparent that wasn't going to happen, because the owner of the paper, some guy in Canada who is known as a pretty frugal guy, as soon as we went through the Warriors' first championship run, and that involved a lot of spur-of-the-moment travel. Oh, geez, we've got a game 6 in Memphis. Well, try ever booking a flight from San Francisco to Memphis without a 7-day advance or a 14-day. It's astronomical. And yet, I think they finally got the receipts from that. And I was just going alone. We didn't have any other staff. And up there, they're going, my God, we're trying to run this on a shoestring. We're paying this guy a bunch of money, and now he's hoarding the budget. Well, so I realized pretty early that was not going to work.
That's really a shame.
I let it ride. The Super Bowl was there, but yeah. I kind of knew it wasn't going to fly before the Super Bowl. They had to get rid of the salaries of me and another guy that they hired at the time just to survive.
Yeah.
And that was the real story. There were some pot shots back and forth, me and the Chronicle and Fun. Their editor-in-chief, when I first got there, she wrote some nasty tweet about me. I never had met her or anything. Some of their writers told me, geez, that shouldn't have been said. And on my way out, when I knew we were just parting ways amicably, I write an email about her and say, she's comes off as a feminist and she's wrecking her newspaper. And literally all hell broke loose again. I don't regret that tweet at all, because I'm just responding to her tweet a year earlier, basically. And then I've got somebody writing that Jay Mariotti lost his gig because he ripped this female editor at the Chronicle. Yep, I ripped the editor at the Chronicle. I don't care if she's male, female, or alien. I don't like somebody taking inaccurate shots at me when I get to town just because she can pad her followers on Twitter. So, I'm never going to back off from a fight. I thought that was a cheap shot. We left amicably. I don't think the publisher, the Examiner, liked me taking that final shot at her, but that is not why I left. They just simply ran out of money and couldn't afford it. I loved my time there. I got to cover Curry, their first championship. I got to cover a Super Bowl in San Francisco. It was a great time with a lot of cool stories. The Giants were coming off 3 World Series and championships in 5 years. I saw sports organizations run by real good ownership and real good management, something that was a departure from the Chicago BS. So I enjoyed it there for a year and a half. It wasn't meant to be. I don't even know if that paper exists. If it does, it's just bare bones.
George in New Jersey wants me to ask you, in 1998, were you at Wrigley Field the day that Kerry Wood had the 20 strikeout game? If you were, what were your thoughts on that?
I was driving home, and it's the fifth inning, and I've got the radio on, and he's whiffing everybody, whiff, whiff. I'm like, wait a minute, what is going on here? I've got to turn around. Well, I'm in the middle of rush hour, 3 o'clock afternoon traffic, and I've got to get to Wrigley Field. Anybody who knows Chicago, trying to get to Wrigley Field from the Edens Expressway in rush hour traffic is almost an impossibility. So I'm flying like a bat out of hell down these back streets and go on, and I walk in, and it's the ninth inning, and I'm there, and there he is, and I'm standing in one of the entrance wells when you walk into Wrigley. So I'm in the stands watching this. I couldn't even get up to the press box at that point. And I see the end of it, and then, afterward I wrote about it. But, yeah, I wasn't going to pass that up. You don't miss a chance at history. If he had ended up with 18, I probably wouldn't have written it. But, yes, if you care about your gig and your profession, you turn your car around and try to get there. And that was one day when it worked out.
All right. Craig in Sacramento says, let me start by saying I love Jay's appearances on your shows every Wednesday night. Dino, I think this is some of the best radio that I've heard in recent times. Then he follows up with this, Jay. I understand that Jay intends to address Tonight on the show, his ongoing incredulity and dismay over the sports world continuing to operate in a separate universe as if the pandemic doesn't exist. With respect specifically to the reaction surrounding the Gronkowski trade, no one is acting like the pandemic doesn't exist. This weekly line of self-righteous, preachy bullshit has become so tiresome and ponderous. He seems to think that the rest of the world should grind to a screeching halt out of respect for the pandemic and that everything should be 24/7 COVID-19. He writes, the NFL owes apologies to no one for carrying out business as usual. The media doesn't owe anyone an apology for reporting it, nor do the fans for deriving just a little bit of pleasure out of it. Even if Jay himself is not, it makes him sound utterly ridiculous. He says, Dino, you'll probably need to find a way to introduce some sort of a coronavirus angle into your discussion of the Last Dance documentary. Otherwise, Jay might refuse to discuss it with you. Failing that, it would be highly hypocritical of him to even address it. For all of Jay's impressive pedigree and his brilliance as a writer, it is becoming increasingly clear that he does not have a true passion for sports, which is fine. There's a niche for everyone. Your response.
Oh, I have a true passion for sports. I think I have a bigger passion right now for making sure we keep athletes healthy before we rush sports back for profit. Don't confuse the message here. Okay? You want to talk about Gronk? Fine. I mean, it's not paramount on my mind right now. I'll watch the draft tomorrow night. I watched the Jordan documentary. But again, don't confuse what I'm saying here. Our discussions have involved this force feeding of sports, you know, the resumption of sports. And that's where I throw up the red flags here, and that's where I get upset, and that's why I say sports people don't get it. They are trying to live in this alternative universe when it comes to the coronavirus. I'm not talking about your pleasure for sports. I'm talking about this constant insistence. Today I saw Randy Levine, president of the Yankees. Yes, we're coming back. When would that be, Randy? Are you thinking about the athletes? Are you thinking about what you're going to pay them? Are you thinking, you know, he's even saying the fans will come back. Really? Do you have a vaccine, Randy? What I get upset about is not sports fans caring about Gronk or Alex Cora tonight or whatever. I get pissed off that sports fans seem to think, we'll be coming back here in a month. No, you're not. And that's where if I sound like I'm being, you know, some guy on high, I'm sorry, but I have to look at the big picture of life here when we're talking about sports, and it's dangerous, first and foremost, to even think about asking athletes in the middle of this pandemic to go back in some biodome bubble and leave their families and play sports and risk catching the virus, bringing it home to their loved ones and to other people. All it takes, Dino, is one positive test in a Vegas dome for the NBA or an Arizona dome for baseball. One. And you're not just talking 25 players, you're talking managers and coaches and doctors and trainers and groundskeepers and clubhouse people and bus drivers and cooks and, you know, just on and on. You're talking hundreds and hundreds of people. If you have one positive test in that dome, your season is canceled. That's where I'm coming from. It's not about your enjoyment of sports. It's just I find it odd that so many people are following sports when there's no sports going on. So, great. Gronk and Brady in Tampa. Well, I don't know. When is that going to happen? 2021, we hope. So I hope that answers your question. It's not about me coming off as pompous about your sports fandom. It's about me wondering, when are sports realistically going to come back amid this constant brainwashing by the sports networks, ESPN, Van Pelt, everybody? You know, while sports are away, how about if and when sports come back? I think we're not treating the people who are dying with enough respect. I hope the guy who wrote the letter, I hope you don't know somebody who has this, or I don't think you would write that letter. There are people dying. There are families that are impacted by this all over the world. And go for it if you want to talk about Gronk, but think something a little more serious going on, my man?
I've got some my own personal nicknames for some of the people on the sports media. You've come up with two that are real. First of all, I didn't even think about it, but the Scott Van Pelt, Mr. Rogers, is perfect. And then when you were covering the Raiders, when they were still out in the bay, you used to call Mark Davis Son of Al, which was great. But, we talked last week on the show, Jay, about DirecTV and making refunds, issuing refunds, or not charging people for various sports packages. I've got them all. I've got the MLB package, NBA, NHL, NFL, the whole run the whole gamut on that. And just two nights ago, my wife told me, by the way, DirecTV is not charging us for the MLB package. They're not charging us for any of the sports packages right now. So they apparently have done a 180. So hopefully other people have benefited from this. But
you know what's going on right now. There are no ticket refunds being issued.
Well, this is what
MLB
I wanted to... This
is not this issuing is, ticket right, refunds.
Well, this is what I wanted to ask you.
The games in March and April that have obviously are not going to be played, and right. Yet they're going to stick by the fine print in the back of the ticket because they're calling it a postponement. But, you know, there are almost 30 million people unemployed in this country. How about if these teams issue the refunds, please?
Well, and we wonder if that's going to happen. So I guess we're left to believe that Major League Baseball is treating the missed games up to this point in time as nothing more than a rainout, and that the tickets that were originally bought either before the season or right up, you know, until the baseball shut down can be used at a later date later in the season, right?
You've got the governor of California and the mayor of Los Angeles both saying they highly doubt there are going to be any mass gatherings until May of 2021 in this state. So why aren't the L.A. Dodgers and the Angels issuing refunds? I mean, what is going on here? I mean, it's just these teams are worth billions, and there are people in, I think more than half, I think this is right, more than half the people, residents of Los Angeles County, are now unemployed. And the Dodgers are keeping the money for what? Until when? They're passing it up on to Ticketmaster. That's bullshit. You know, just refund the money. I nobody is in the mood for this, for these teams continuing to act as if, you know, our billions are going down the drain and we got to protect them. Nobody cares about you guys, you know, and yet, so, yeah, Dino, I don't know how many fans out there have been impacted by this, but there has been a class action suit filed, and I don't see how possibly these teams can win.
ESPN is reporting that a Tiger Woods-Phil Mickelson golf match involving football legends Peyton Manning and Tom Brady is planned for this coming May. This is according to Turner Sports. They're calling it, Jay, the Match Champion for Charity. It's going to benefit, they say, coronavirus relief. The event is going to air live on TNT, possibly over Memorial Day weekend, at an undisclosed location without spectators. Your thoughts on that?
Well, great. As we've talked, golf is the one sport where social distancing can work. But as Brooks Koepka pointed out, he's not so sure. We've got the PGA starting in June. He pointed out that golfers still have to fly to events. They still have to stay in hotels, still have to rent cars, still have to deal with their caddies. How is that going to work? It's not as simple as it sounds. Now, I'm glad this event is for charity. You're going to have social distancing. It's doable, but, you know, stand back on the green. Let somebody else pick up the ball. I mean, yeah, I guess it's doable, but the conviviality of golf, you know, that we saw in that Tiger Phil match play event, well, that you're going to have to be in, I guess, some sort of earplug deal where earbuds where you're going to be, you know, 15 yards away from Phil when you're trying to talk to him or Peyton Manning. But hey, if you can bring back feasible, safe events for people, great! That's awesome! But basketball is not safe for obvious reasons. You're dripping on each other, and I mean, come on. And football isn't, obviously. You're tackling and sweating and dripping on each other. And hockey isn't. And wrestling isn't. And combat sports, no. But golf, yeah. I don't know about tennis. Maybe. You know, somebody, you know, it'd have to be complete, you know, replacing the balls quite often. Bring it back if you can, but most of this stuff, it's impossible to bring it back in the middle of a pandemic when we have no idea where it's going. So what do I think? If they can pull it off and everybody's safe, great.
All right, and let me leave you with this final thing on another appearance by Mariotti on the Dino Costa Show on this Wednesday night. One of the things I did mention, if I can pivot and segue back to the Last Dance documentary, one of the things I said earlier this week, Jay, is, and of course people love to get into debates, and they're oftentimes it's a fruitless outcome because it's these kind of comparative situations are most always subjective, left up to the interpretation of the individual, but it still hasn't stopped people from talking about who's been the greatest player in the NBA of all time. Is it Jordan? Is it LeBron? Is it this one? Is it that one? One of the things that struck me, and one of the things I said earlier on the show this week, was that the one thing that I extracted maybe from that, it didn't get into it, but it was something that made me think along these lines, was that when we talk about Jordan in not Jordan, but when we talk about LeBron James in contemporary times, and then we go back and we revisit when Jordan was in the midst of his career, in terms of popularity, in terms of universal adulation, in terms of rooting for a guy to do well, the difference between Jordan and LeBron could not be any more different. There are people that genuinely do not like LeBron. They root against him. He's very political. He's outspoken. Michael, on the other hand, was the antithesis of all of that. And, of course, his marketing dollars that he accrued over his years were monstrous as the result of him being a centrist and refusing to get into a left-right paradigm along political or social lines. But the one thing that stood out to me was that you can debate all the livelong day who, what player you would rather have if you're starting a team from scratch, and both LeBron and Michael were out there, but there is no disputing the fact that in terms of adulation, love, popularity worldwide, Michael had that and has that over LeBron in spades.
Well, he was apolitical. Michael would not take a social stand. He was criticized quite often by Jim Brown and others. He made the comment, Republicans wear sneakers too. Michael Jordan was thinking about his brand at all times and not pissing anybody off within that brand. Michael Jordan's ad campaigns, Dino, like Mike, if I can be like Mike, who wouldn't love that? Kids love it. I mean, it was just brought a smile to your face. He had very smart marketing people. Hell, he had a deal with Hanes Underwear because apparently he signed a lifetime deal with Hanes. So you got Michael Jordan up until a couple of years ago doing, you know, boxer shorts ads for Hanes Underwear.
Yeah.
I mean, in that sense, marketing-wise, and on the basketball court, this man never did anything wrong. It's just gambling. And that's why I want to see what happens in this docuseries, how heavily they do get into that. Because, hey, Dino, Pete Rose's life has been ruined by his gambling ban. Did the NBA look the other way? From what I can tell, and I was in Cincinnati when Pete Rose was a gambling fiend, Michael Jordan was a gambling fiend. No doubt about it. And that's not a revelation. Just, my God, I mean, there have been books written about it. Richard Esquinas, the guy who wrote the book who kept taking Michael's money. The problem there is, are you extorting Michael Jordan on the 18th green? Hey, why don't you throw the over-under? I'm not accusing anybody of that. I'm just saying Jordan is leaving himself vulnerable to extortion if he's that itchy of a gambler. And that was the problem with Michael. And I'd be curious how he is painted in this documentary. Somehow, Dino, he overcame that. That was early in his, or mid-career. That was, you know, early 90s. But he kept on gambling. That never ended. And my understanding is you're going to see in that final season in Chicago, he's betting on the like something in a locker room. Is something, you know, frivolous. He'll want to wager on it. That's a man who to this day has a gambling issue. There's no doubt about it. Yet, what you're talking about, the grand popularity of Jordan, it seems unaffected. And because he's totally in control of this docuseries as the executive producer, he is completely in control of the narrative. And by the end of this, I'm guessing, based on the first two, that his love and adulation is going to increase even more, even though you're going to see him as a tyrant. You've already seen him go after people at practice. But I think deep down, as you know, I know, you want teammates to be on your level and to try to win. It's just the methods involved. It could turn some people off. But in the end, I think anybody who thinks LeBron became bigger than Michael or Kobe became bigger than Michael, by the end of this thing, you're going to realize there is no debate.
Agreed. Agreed. Now, by the way, did they, as depicted in the film, when they went over there for preseason, going into that last hurrah season, did the Sun-Times send you over there to cover that when they were in France?
No.
No?
I was not in Paris. Sun-Times didn't have reams of money, Dino.
Yeah. Yeah. Well.
You know, we had to pretty much save up for the Bulls' run, and for a lot of the regular season, it was just one guy, the beat writer, was on the road. Most newspapers would have, in that era, had two or three people on the road with the Bulls in the final season. So, no, I was not in Paris, but, oh, I did every, you know, the playoffs, any number of regular season games.
Well, sure.
You know, when, yeah, and the bigger regular season games we would always do. But, no, it, you know, the Sun-Times, you know, would every put, that was how they made money. They, but every playoff game for years, they would wrap the playoff coverage around the actual newspaper. So the Sears Tower could have fallen down, and you wouldn't read about it until page 9, because the Bulls coverage was wrapped around the paper. That's how much money the Chicago Sun-Times made from the Michael Jordan era. Everybody profited from Michael Jordan, myself included.
Jay, I saw the other night, you mentioned the movie a couple weeks ago. I finally got around to seeing it on DirecTV. Richard Jewell, what a phenomenal film. They did take some creative license in there with the reporter Kathy Scruggs from the AJC in terms of how she got the information. They did kind of they go out of their way to, you know, to show what didn't happen, how she did get access to that information that Jewell was a suspect. But, man, what a terrific movie from beginning to end. That was time well spent.
Yeah, Clint Eastwood was the director in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, which really should just, you know, shut up and be thankful there's still an existence after that debacle. They went after Eastwood Hart. All in all, I who knows? I don't know if Kathy Scruggs was sleeping with FBI agents or not. I mean, they may just be, you know, defending her without knowing themselves. I don't know. That said, the story is this. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution and many media outlets completely obliterated and smeared Richard Jewell without really knowing the true story. Shame on them. And I have never really heard any sort of apology from that newspaper.
My friend, this was another great hour of radio. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think the audience did as well. Continue to grind out there. We'll see you next week. Same time, same place, same channel.
Okay, Dino, thanks,
man. All right, Jay Mariotti, the one and only on the show on this Wednesday night as we have bled now over into hour number 3.